Hear now scriptures from Mark chapter 1, 19 through the 20th verse. As Jesus went a little farther, he saw James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John, who were in their boat mending the nets. Immediately he called them, and they left their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired men and followed him. Mark chapter 3, verse 17. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Jesus nicknamed them sons of thunder. Mark 10, verses 35 through 37. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. Teacher, they said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. What do you want me to do for you? He asked. Here again, the question of Jesus. What do you want me to do for you? They replied, let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in your glory. Acts chapter 12, verses 1 through 2. About that time, King Herod laid violent hands upon some who belonged to the church. He had James, the brother of John, killed with the sword.
All right.
I'm sorry, they warned me not to get too close. But listen, I gotta know, are you okay in here?
Yeah, I'm okay.
I'll be honest, you don't look like you're doing okay.
Look who's talking. Look, old brother. I'm okay. John, I know I might not leave this place, but I'm okay. I was thinking about us this morning. I was thinking about that time when we were boys. And remember, we got this idea to take out Father's fishing boat without his knowing about it, and we knew if we got caught, he'd be mad. You remember that?
Listen, that is not how I remember it. You said, let's take Father's boat out. I said, absolutely not. If Father catches us, he will kill us both. And then you said, no, it'll be fine. It'll be all right. Father will never know. Now, that's what I remember.
That's a version two. Well, you remember, we got in that storm. And you got scared, and you fell out of the boat.
Listen, these soldiers have clearly done something with your mind. That is not how I remember it. That's not how I remember it. It was not the storm, it was your steering. I was literally drowning, and you yell out literally with these words, hey, get back in the boat. If you drown, Dad is gonna kill us both.
Okay, maybe it was something like that. I guess I've always been getting you in trouble.
But good trouble.
Yeah. Good trouble. Think about it. I mean, 3-4 years ago, we were in our father's boat. We had the most successful business on the entire sea. We had hired hands. Nobody else had that. And then I went out to hear John the Baptizer preach. And I came back and I got you. And I took you to hear him. Did I ever tell you about what Father said to me? We started following him. One time when we were home, Father set me down. And he said, "Why are you going out to hear him?" I didn't know what to say. I just tried to say, when he preaches, it's like my heart gets on fire. He said to me, "If you're willing to forfeit your future to traipse around the country following some prophet, don't take your brother with you. John will do whatever you do, James. Don't waste his future too." And then he came along. You remember John pointed them out to us one day. We walked behind him and he knew we were there and he turned around. You remember that question he asked us? "What are you looking for?" You didn't know what to say either. I didn't know, but I knew I was looking for something. I just said, "Where are you staying?" That's stupid. And he said, "Come and see." And we did. And 1 week later, all it took was him walking by our boat and saying, "Follow me." We haven't been back there since. And now I'm here. And I've been thinking about how I got here. And there's this question that keeps coming to me. How did we get to be in his inner circle? Did you ever think about that? I mean, it was always you and me and Peter. What did he see in us? And think about what we saw the others didn't. I mean, it started in Capernaum. Remember, we were walking to Peter's house. And he was talking about how his mother-in-law had been sick. And he said, I don't think she's going to make it. And we got inside. And he told us to come in the room with him. And he healed her. I mean, within minutes, she was up and cooking. And then there was that day in the house of that synagogue ruler. What was his name? Jairus. Only this time, his daughter had died. And Jesus went in and he made everyone leave except us. And he stood over her body. He spoke Aramaic. "Talitha kum." "Little girl, get up." And her eyes started blinking. And she sat up. And he took her by the hand and started. We saw that. And then he took the three of us up to Mount Tabor that day. I don't know what the others were doing. I just remember he came to us and said, "Come with me." And we followed him up all the way to the top of the mountain. And it was like we got in a fog or something. But then, how in the world do you describe it? I mean, it was like he was transfigured. And he was talking to Moses and Elijah. We did not make that up. Why us? I I always thought it's because we were special. I mean, you and me, we'd been leading a whole staff of people. Nobody else had done that. Peter, I mean, he was Peter, he's a head case, but he's a convincing head case. But still, it didn't make a lot of sense. And I started second guessing why I was there that day that we went through Samaria. And we went through that village and everyone shut their door in our face. And we got so mad. You remember, we went to him and we said, send down fire from heaven, destroy these people. And he got angry. It's the first time I heard him raise his voice with us. He said, I didn't come to destroy people. I came to save them. I just thought, dude, if that's your mission, I don't know that it's mine. Some people aren't worth saving, you know, especially those people. Not everybody deserves to be saved. But the day I almost left the group was that day we asked for positions of honor.
Here we go again. Here we go again. We asked. We asked.
Oh, come on, John. I mean, man, are we going to do this here again? When are you ever going to let it go? Okay, are you ready? I ask. Okay, I ask. I dragged you along, and I ask. Do you know why? It's because I was embarrassed. I wanted to know what I was going to get out of all of this, and I was too ashamed to go by myself. And I made you go with me. That's why. I wasn't even listening to what he was saying. And that's what happens. It's what happens when you're so focused on yourself. All I could think about was when could I ask him what I wanted to ask him? When could we get him aside? I didn't even hear him talk about his suffering and his death. And then I asked if we could sit at his right and left hand in his kingdom. I suppose you could say my timing was a little off that day. You remember what he said? You remember his answer, the question? What do you want me to do for you? I think that's the most important thing he ever said to me. That's what I'd been waiting for. I'd been waiting for him to say, what do you want me to do for you? After the years of following, after being faithful, I wanted him to say, James, what do you want? What do you need? But that isn't exactly what he said, is it? He didn't say, what do you need? He said, what do you want? And I think it's because he knew that until I was honest about what I wanted, I couldn't find out what I needed. And that is when I began to realize why we were in the inner circle. It wasn't because we were special. Okay, I tell you what, I won't even bring you into it. I won't bring Peter into it. I'll just talk about me. It was not because I was better than the others. He brought me closer because I needed to be. I was selfish. I was stubborn. I was hot-tempered. And I didn't understand. He needed me to be closer. and of all places, where I started to understand was at his crucifixion. I can't forget the details. He emerged from the Antonia fortress, beaten, bloody. He could barely stand up. They put that beam on his shoulders. He staggered. He groaned when they struck the nails. I still picture his face on the cross. And then he breathed one big sigh and cried out and slumped his head. And that was it. The other disciples tell me not to focus on that. Focus on what came after. Focus on the good and what God did with it. But the good doesn't make any sense if you don't understand the pain. You see, the pain was where I saw his power. I couldn't understand why somebody who had the power to help other people the way he did would not help himself. That made no sense. He healed people. He brought people back from the dead. He had the power not to let that happen. Why? Isn't that why you have power? To get what you want? And all of a sudden I realized, looking at him on the cross, no. That's not power at all. When you can get what you want, that's privilege. When we can get what we want for ourselves, that's privilege. Power? Power is having the privilege to get what you want and not do it. That's power. And that's when I found the answer to his question. What do you want me to do for you? I want that. I want the power to not have life turn out the way I want it, and to be okay. You speak Latin. What does the phrase ad utrumque passado mean? Ad utrumque passado.
Ad utrumque passado.
Yeah.
Literally means ready for either. Ready for either. That's what it means.
Ready for either. Of course it does. Of course it does. I found this coin, a Roman coin, and it had the image of an ox in the middle of it. And on one side was an altar. And on the other side was a plow. And below it, ad utrumque passado. Ready for either. Sacrifice or service. I get it. I get it. John, I'm ready for either. Brother, I'm ready for either. And I'm not giving up. I'm not giving up. As long as we're alive, we keep going. We keep believing
that God is still at work, even when we can't see it. We keep going and we don't give up. But we don't need everything to be okay. To be okay. I want to grow old. I want to see our grandchildren playing together one day. I would want more than anything for that. But the end of my life is not the end of my life. I'm okay. I'm okay. John, you're smart. Go write the story. Tell his story. Tell everything you know. Tell it all. But when you tell about us, don't use my name. I don't want people to think about me. I want them to think about him and what he's done for them. You tell it. You tell it. Everything. Make sure you write it down. John, I'm okay. I'm okay.
James, son of Zebedee, was executed in the year 44 AD by King Herod Agrippa I. He was the first of the disciples of Jesus to die. He did not write a gospel or letter. There are no stories of miracles associated with him, but there is a myth about James. It says his remains were carried to Spain and buried beneath what is now the Cathedral of Galicia. This, of course, cannot be proven, yet a tradition form called the Camino de Santiago, or Way of St. James, where millions upon millions have walked this path of pilgrimage. People of all walks of life, different races and nationalities, people seeking guidance and healing from the hurts of life, from the confusion of our world, from pain that makes no sense. And the Way of St. James gives them peace. Perhaps they come seeking to understand and answer for themselves Jesus' question, what do you want me to do for you?